How's it going, guys? Another huge episode of the Almost Made It podcast about to drop. This week we had on none other than Michael Zappers Zappone.
He went in depth about being in camp with the Socceroos, the problem with the A-League, and going to the Champions League final to watch his beloved Juve.
Let's jump straight in. Welcome back to another episode of the Almost Made It podcast, proudly brought to you by Cultural Club. Another huge episode coming at you this week. You would have seen this man all over your TV screens, for sure. Another man who needs no introduction, but we'll do it anyway. He follows the... We've been trying to get him on for a few weeks, yeah. But he's been in camp with the Socceroos. What he does, no one knows. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Michael Zappers Zappone. How are you?
Thanks for having me, gents. It's good. I think some of the players don't know what I do there. Anyway,
look, well, to be honest, I've actually been asked to ask you that.
Yeah.
Because I'll mention him off air, but a few boys know you. And they're like, he's always with the Socceroos. What does he actually do? So what do you do with
it? Yeah, I help with media and help promote the team and promote the players and organise media interviews and all that sort of thing. So they've got a full-time media person, Matt Townsend, who's new. So he's the day-to-day guy who looks after the Socceroos media, but I go in and help during camps. So I work very closely with the coaching staff, with Graham Arnold and the players to help promote the Socceroos and make sure we're selling stadiums out like we did in Canberra and in Sydney. So it was great to see both stadiums were fully sold out. And it's showing that, you know, the Socceroos brand is as strong as it's ever been.
Do you get like close with the players as well? Do they let you sort of...
I think you've got to maintain your distance. It's a professional relationship. So some players will ask you questions. Some players will want to go out for a coffee with you. Others maintain their distance. So some players will want to play golf, you know, if they've got a day off and go off and do that with their mates. And others will be a bit closer. So, yeah, I think you get close to certain players. But, yeah, there's always a professional distance there as well.
It'd be cool to just see, like, the day-to-day life of camp life.
Yeah, it really is. And when we were in Melbourne, we actually did a story about that. So we got Channel 10 to come in and did a behind-the-scenes look at a day in the life of the Socceroos camp. Yeah, yeah. So they did a really nice story about that. We had the Herald Sun come in to do the same. So they spent a day with us. They went into the team meetings. They went into the coaches' meetings. They went into the rehab for the players. They went into the literally interviewing Harry Suter in the ice bath. And the journo was doing this, you know. So, yeah, it's really a really interesting thing to see. And I think what part of my job is to bring that to life, to show people what happens behind the scenes, to show people how hard it is to prepare for an international because, as you guys know, playing in Europe is not easy. Traveling from Europe, so players are playing a game on a Saturday or a Sunday in European time, flying here and then having to have 24 hours in Australia and then play again in international fixture, in a World Cup qualifier.
Crazy.
And a lot of people don't realise how difficult that can be. Don't forget the time zones. Don't forget 24 hours on a plane. Yes, they fly business class, but still 24 hours on a plane. And then you've got to prepare and play an international fixture. So bringing that to life and highlighting how difficult it can be is part of my job.
Also, like for us, you've got the best job in the world. If you're not playing, you're pretty much there. So it's
absolutely. Much, you know, like, and as you said, you know, in your intro, I never made it. So this is the next best thing for me, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
exactly. Being part of it. And I feel like a kid. I always wanted to play football or quickly realised I was never going to be good enough to play at a professional level. So the next best thing was to pursue that dream through the media.
That's awesome. So where did the love of football begin then?
I grew up in Fawkner in the northern suburbs of Melbourne and I played for a junior club called the Fawkner Azzurri, and named after the Italian national team.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So I grew up loving football there. I've got memories of, you know, playing under eights and, with my mates, you know, I would have been 6 or 7 years old and just loved it from that point on. And I'd go, my dad would take me to training, come and watch. My grandfather, we lived around the corner, so he would take me to games and you'd hang around the club all day and then you'd go and watch the senior team play. And Fawkner were a Premier League side, an NPL side, you know, they were – but I thought they were, you know, the bee's knees. I thought they were amazing. So that's who I followed as a kid because I played for Fawkner and I wanted to play for the senior team. And I remember once Juventus came to train when they came out in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
They came to train at Faulkner Soccer Club. It was mayhem. Could you imagine the Juventus of today going to going to train at Faulkner?
No way. That's nice. Yeah,
Paolo Rossi, wow. Dino Zoff, Trapattoni was the coach at the time. They're rocking up Duke's Road in a bus.
Crazy. <That's
laughs> getting off and training there. It was brilliant.
That is so crazy.
Did you meet any of them? Or just... You know,
I was a kid, so there were no phones back then. I think I got a signature of Paolo Rossi because everyone wanted his signature. But yeah, it was brilliant. And I remember going to the MCG. They played against the Socceroos at the time. So back in those days, I'm showing my age. When an international team like Juventus came out here, they would play against the Socceroos, against Melbourne Victory or South Melbourne or Brunswick Juventus.
Yeah.
So I remember watching them at the MCG, flying my Juventus flag, watching them against Australia.
Did they lose?
I can't remember the result.
Because we interviewed Santo a few weeks back and we were talking about this. I think he said...
Well, boss, sounds of Santo's stories, I don't think Juventus players came here to play.
No, I think they
Well, I don't think they took that game serious.
I did see the clip and I've heard the story many times. Santo would have lots of rings in his pocket.
I could just imagine what they got up
to. So you're obviously a Juventino, yeah?
I am. Yeah. Followed Juventus all my life. And, geez, if you've got an hour, we'll talk about the problems of Juventus at the moment. But my highlight of being a Juventus fan was, yes, that in the 80s, but a lifelong dream of mine was to watch Juventus in a Champions League final. So one of my very good friends, one of my best mates, and I went to the final against Barcelona in Berlin. The ticket to the game cost us more than our airfare.
I can imagine.
So the airfare was, I don't know, $1,600 return, and the ticket cost more than that. But we were lucky enough to be there and witness that. Yes, we lost, but geez, what a few days it was, traveling as a fan. Lou Sticker was on the trip as well. He came with us, and he's a big Juventus fan, and another friend of ours, Robbie, and it was a wonderful few days, and there was a period where that team, that Barcelona team, was unbelievable. They had Neymar, they had Messi. That was their front three was ridiculous. Suarez, was their front three. So they were a brilliant side, and Juventus were in the game for a long period. Barcelona scored first, Juventus equalised. So when we scored, I was in the curva with all the Juventus fans, and it was mayhem. Erupted. Like, we were hugging and kissing people we'd never met in our lives. And it was level for quite some time, and then Barcelona scored a couple of late ones and it was all over. But yeah, brilliant. As a football fan, that was a brilliant experience.
It would have been so good just to immerse yourself, with the Juventini.
Yeah.
Because I feel like we've spoken about this before, like Barcelona, Real Madrid, all these massive clubs, PSG, they're a little bit touristy.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? They haven't got that full-on supporter base. Like Juve. I know Juve have a lot of fans all around Italy.
Well, the criticism for Juve is that they're a little bit like that too, because that Juve is one of the biggest supporters club in Italy. So if you're from Calabria, which is
where Juve, southern as all my family goes to
Sicily, you follow Juve or AC Milan. Yeah. So there is a little bit of criticism about Italy about that Juve like that, but there is a very strong hardcore supporter base as well. Yeah,
it would have been worth every cent, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And then from playing at Faulkner, when did you realise this isn't for me?
Yeah, well, I probably realised that. I still love playing, but I realised I was never going to make it. And then I was at school, was really interested in journalism. So in year 10, so you do work experience when you're in year 10, right? Yeah. I think that still happens today.
Yeah.
And I wrote to all the TV stations, and I didn't get into any of the TV stations, but I got work experience at a radio station called 3AK. So it was like 3AW it is today. It was a talk station. Mm. And I remember the highlight of that was I made coffee for John Farnham.
What coffees do you have?
Like, Makona,
Yeah,
one of those. And I was nervous bringing it into the studio. But that was brilliant because then I was able to get a job there at 3AK and worked there on the weekend. So in year 11 and year 12, I was working at the radio station on the weekends, just learning everything there was to learn about a radio station, like panel operating and transforming records onto carts, because you used to play off carts back in those days. And there was a whole record law. Every time a new record would be released, you'd have to transfer the record onto a cart. So that you just learned everything.
Yeah.
And then when I finished year 12, 3AK offered me a job as a journalist. and as a cadet, like an apprenticeship. And that's how I started my career in the media. And at that point, that sort of took over precedence, and I knew that that was probably going to be more of a career path than football was for me. But I continued to play. I always played, and played at Melbourne Uni, Uni Blues, and then I played at St. Kevin's, which is where I went to school. I started up a soccer club, football club there, and St. Kevin's Old Boys Football Club still exists today.
Yeah, yeah,
they play in State League Division 5.
Yeah, yeah.
But I started the club up in 1999.
There you go.
Yeah.
So how did you sort of go – because obviously you went into journalism as a broad sort of topic. Yeah. How did you get into like the sport, the football sort of things?
Well, I loved football. And then 3AK, when I first joined, was a mainstream radio station. But then not long after I joined, it was – bought out by an Italian guy, and it became a bilingual station. So it was then it became Tre a Cappa. And so half of the program was in English and half of it was in Italian. So it sort of became a community station. But I stuck around because then I was became the main newsreader. So I was the English newsreader. I'm 18 and I'm reading English news at, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning. And then at, you know, after me would come the Italian news. So it'd be bilingual, everything half and half. So the relevance to that story is that they also started broadcasting the NSL, the National Soccer League. So there was a show called Super Soccer Sunday, and a guy called Sebastian Italia and Greg Blake. Greg Blake's still around. He's still calling games. I think he was doing Heidelberg TV last year. Oh, and he worked on Optus TV back in the day. And they started commentating the National Soccer League, and I started working on the broadcasts with them. So initially I would be pushing the buttons and then they'd send me out to other grounds and, you know, do around the grounds reports. And if they were at one ground, I'd be at the other and dialing in the results and literally dialing in the results. And that's how I got into football broadcasting. That fell over at one point and I ended up pursuing my journalistic career. I actually went to Country Victoria and I worked at a radio station there called 3HA in Hamilton. And then I moved to Horsham and worked in radio in Horsham. And then I thought, well, that's if the football side of things gone. Then SEN started up. And as luck would have it, one of my mates was involved in setting up SEN. So I said to him, mate, you guys need a football program, because it was all about AFL initially. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I knew they were about to start. And I said, can we do a pilot? Give us the chance to record a pilot program on football and at least, you know, give us an hour a week so we could talk about football. And he's like, yeah, right, no problem, great idea. So he said, got to get a team together. So at the time, the Herald Sun had a football journalist called Peter DeZira, and he would be the main football journalist. And then I spoke to Peter, and Peter said, yeah, great idea, I'd love to be involved. He goes, you need to get someone else though. You need a football person, because we're just, you know, two journalists. He goes, Ange Postecoglou, he's your man. Like, he's brilliant. He's got a brilliant football brain. He's currently not working. He would be great. I'm like, great. All right, let's ring Ange. And we did. Yeah. So Ange, Peter DeZira and I recorded a pilot for the first ever football show on SEN. Oh. They listened to it. They loved it. And we had the first football show on SEN. So that's how it all started. And Ange and I did the show with Peter DeZira probably for a year or so. And then Ange was appointed to the role at, I think, Brisbane Roar. And once he got the job at Brisbane, then he obviously left us to coach at Brisbane.
Yeah.
And I got Trimmers in. Trimmers is brilliant. So yeah. Trimmers was a hero of mine, and he was fantastic. So Trimmers and I then called every season of the A-League for the first three seasons, because SEN didn't have the rights to the AFL. So they were looking for live sport content. Yeah. So we called season 1, 2, and 3 of the A-League, home and away, every game for Melbourne Victory. And they would fly us everywhere. They flew us to Wellington. They flew us to Perth. And it was brilliant. We'd have an hour talk back before the game, an hour talk back after the game, and people would ring up. And, you know, those are the days where they were getting 50,000 people to Marvel Stadium to watch Victory. And you can imagine, you know, driving into the game, you're listening to the radio and you ring up talk back, and the same when you're leaving. If the team wins, everyone's happy. Yeah, if the team loses, everyone wants Ernie Merrick sacked. And that was it. And that was brilliant. That were the first three seasons of the A-League, I think, I hold very fond memories to me because Trimmers was brilliant at what he did and a brilliant person, and B, because the audience was massive on SEN.
You've had an experience with the NSL?
Yes.
Now the A-League. What's the main difference? Do you think something went wrong? I know you have to be careful what you say.
Not at all. No, I don't have to be careful at all.
But, you know, what do you think I don't want to say went wrong because it's different, but yeah. What's missing?
I look at my experience as a kid growing up in Faulkner as an Italian. I sort of didn't really have a team. Like Brunswick Juventus were there and I sort of went, but I didn't really. And then they fell over and they ceased to exist. So as an Italian kid of my era, I turned 50 this year, so I'm old. I'm old enough to be your dad. But as an Italian kid in my era, I didn't really have a team to follow in the NSL. So, yeah, I'd go and watch the grand finals, you know, I'd watch South Melbourne if they were in a grand final or Melbourne Knights if they were in a grand final or Carlton. I sort of tried to get into it, but because I was a Geelong supporter in the AFL, I didn't really like Carlton. So, you know, there was nothing really for me to hold on to. But if you're a Greek kid or a Croatian kid, yeah, you had something to follow. Yeah. So I think there was a lot good about the NSL, but there was still a lot missing because of the way that the teams were structured. So I think the A-League in the early years, so I'm talking about season 3 and the highlights, season 4, season 10 when Del Piero came, massive.
Yeah.
Massive. Like it was a game between Melbourne Victory and Sydney FC. I remember we called it at Marvel Stadium, 55,000 people just for a home and away game. Yeah. It was sold out.
Was it? No, that was before.
Del Piero. Maybe it was. But when Del Piero was there, they were getting 30 or 40,000 people and they were selling out stadiums. And I think the difference was it wasn't just about Del Piero, but it was he was a big part of it. And Emil Heskey and Shinji Ono, those three marquees at the time made a big difference to the league. Now, I'm not suggesting that we need to do that, but I think it helps. I think having one or two big marquee players helps. It doesn't, and there will be people say, no, that's rubbish because it means that kids don't get a chance to play. Yes, they do. There are 12 teams in the league. Yeah. One player is not going to mean that Nestori and Nkunda doesn't get a chance to play for Adelaide United. Yes, he will still get that chance. But what it does do is it means that the theatre goers will come and watch us and then they will be converted because when they come and watch us play, they'll say, wow, this is actually half decent.
Yeah.
That, I stopped becoming an Euro snob. They can play football. 3-3. Wow, fantastic. Mm. What a goal that was. Look at the goal that Terry Antonis scored. That fits on any stage in the world, that goal. And that happens every week. We're just not exposed to it. And you asked me who was playing this weekend. Well, you know what? You should know that. It's not your fault. We don't do a good job as a sport of promoting what we do.
It's true. Like, it's crazy. You'd think like the derby in Melbourne, a football city. Like, we're football crazy here.
There's no AFL on in Melbourne this weekend.
That's true.
The APL, whether they meant it or not, absolutely the right thing to do. Put the biggest game on this weekend. There's no distraction.
But it should be plastered everywhere.
Amy Park should be full.
It should be sold out.
It should be sold out. And it should be everywhere. It should be – turn on the radio, it should be there. You'd be driving down Hoddle Street, it should be there. Yeah. But it's not.
Why?
And that's the biggest question.
Is there something more behind it?
Well, I think they're financially struggling, the APL, and we've seen that with, you know, the terrible position where they had to lay off so many people earlier this season. A lot of good people lost their jobs and their livelihoods, and we can unpack that. It'll take a while to do that, but they made some decisions, invested some money into certain areas of their business, which perhaps they shouldn't have, and now they're paying the price for that. So there's a long way to go. A lot of people say, oh, you know, we've lost all hope and things aren't going to improve. I believe they will, but I believe the right people need to be in there making the right decisions to grow the game. We love the game. There are people that love the game. It's not just the ethnics that love the game. The Aussies love the game too. Look at the scenes at Federation Square. Look at the scenes in the Women's World Cup. The Socceroos and the Matildas are the two most popular sporting national teams in this country. That's amazing.
It's huge, yeah.
So people love our sport. We've just got to show them and expose them to what we do week in, week out in the A-League. A-League men and A-League women.
It's just so frustrating. Like as two fans, you know, we want to watch football. But
we want to go to the games with our mates and be like, yeah, but yeah, I don't know. But like you said, it's
but
a
let
big
me ask you, why don't you?
I find it hard to like going back to sort of your thing with the NSL. I can't identify myself with the club.
Yeah,
you know, it's like for example, if I grew up in Faulkner, I feel part of that club, like it's a community.
Yeah.
Whereas like I'll go now and I'm like Melbourne Victory, Melbourne City, Western United. I don't really feel a connection with them.
Yeah.
Whereas like that's one thing maybe I wish that they kept through going through to the A-League, where there's that lack of identity. I'm not sure. Also, probably just, I haven't, like we said, it's not we're not exposed to it as much.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But
you're the generation that grew up with the A-League.
But don't get me wrong, we used to go.
To be honest, when it first started, we were all over. We remember.
It's like we used to go every game to Victory.
Yeah.
And they had
so they've done something. There's something that's there's a disconnect because you were going when the crowds were full.
Yeah,
well, you were in the North Terrace. You were in the blue and white brigade, whatever it was.
100%.
I know that's changed, but they're the groups that need to reconvene and reignite that passion.
But Zappa's anything that was good got rid of,
and that's the problem.
Anything
look
that
at Western
bought
Sydney, for
people,
example,
and that's the problem.
I would have loved to just go on to a Western Sydney game, to be honest.
Yeah, just for the atmosphere.
Sydney, for that.
I lived in Sydney when Del Piero was there. I was living in Sydney and I went to the old Parramatta Stadium for a derby. I'll never forget it. And it was half the stadium was red and half the stadium was blue. Yeah. And it was brilliant.
It
But what happens, you know?
Well, and what happened was we treated our fans badly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a big one.
And that continues to happen till this day. It happened a month ago at Western Sydney.
Yeah.
They kicked fans out because they stood on the seats. Let's understand our culture. Let's understand that guys like you, guys like my son who are 18 and want to go to the football, if they're standing on a seat, it doesn't mean they're trying to do something wrong.
Exactly.
They're supporting their team.
Exactly right. It just, I don't know. Even with the whole, I understand to an extent because we're not exposed to it, but flares.
Look, even the
pyrotechnics. I get it.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's not, people aren't doing it to be violent. It's just part of football culture.
Yeah.
Especially in Europe, whatever.
Absolutely.
And when you see the pictures of fans in Europe, whatever, it's incredible. Mm. We've been there. We've been to the.
But it's actually
been
orchestrated.
Exactly.
Like it's performance almost.
And then,
do you know what I mean?
When we had the Blue and White Brigade and all these guys and, you know, with the banners and the T4 and everything, it was cool. It was amazing. You wanted to be there. And then they banned the banners. Yeah. They banned the flags. You can't do this. You can't do that. And it ruins it. You don't want to go anymore.
Absolutely.
Well, I think that's one reason why people don't go.
And we need to get back there.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we don't help ourselves sometimes.
No, we don't.
So after the World Cup, the derby, and Melbourne Victory, Melbourne City, and the incident with Tommy Glover, we don't help ourselves.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
So then we start again.
Stupidity. Exactly. That was frustrating as well.
There's one thing I wanted to ask you. Do you think, I don't know, because it's the world we live in, maybe more games free to air would help? As in expose the league to people instead of like having it on sort of streaming-based platforms. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it does. It absolutely does. Yeah. I worked for Fox. Yeah. Now I work for Channel 10. So one of the things that people used to say to me when I was at Fox was like, why isn't it on free-to-air? Mm. Well, the answer to that is Fox is the one that's funding the sport. Fox is paying the players' wages. Fox is paying for the rights. That was the argument then. Now we've got Channel 10 and Paramount Plus. So Paramount Plus is trying to grow a brand globally, not just in Australia. Paramount Plus is a massive all over the world, in the US, in Italy. They sponsor the Serie A in Italy. So they're trying to grow that platform. We do have games on free-to-air. Yeah. So, but the problem is people don't know about it.
Yeah,
so Saturday night, the derby,
it's on
Channel 10,
mm-hmm.
free-to-air. It's not on the main channel. Now, that's another point. Maybe it should be on the main channel, but it's not. So it's on 10 bold.
Yeah.
And so on Saturday night, you can, and I have to still tell my mum, no, it's on 10.
Yeah.
You know, don't worry, you don't have to get Paramount. It's on channel 10. 10, 10 which one? 10 bold. Okay, go up. Yeah. So it's on. And so is the Sunday game. So, yes, the more exposure we get on free to air, the better it will be.
But
absolutely.
Then it needs to be advertised that
and
it's on there.
You need to know it's there.
Definitely.
You need to know it's, you can watch it.
I think we've laid the foundation because it was there, it was big. The A-League was big.
Yeah.
I think we know how to do it. It just needs to be done.
Yeah.
And like you said, get the right people in a decision-making position.
Yeah. And what I love about the A-League, and don't misinterpret this, but I love seeing kids come through, and it's not a development league. People say it shouldn't be a development league, but I think it almost has to be because once a player is exposed for two or three seasons at this level, then they have to move overseas to go to the next level.
Yeah.
Now, some may argue that you have to go as a 15-year-old to make it, and that might be the case for some people. But if you ask Nestor Aaron Kunda, if he went overseas as a 15-year-old, he probably wouldn't have made it.
Mm.
Now, the jury will still be out on Nestor. He's got amazing potential, and we've seen what he's capable of in the A-League, and now it's time for him to prove it in Europe. And, you know, going to Bayern Munich is no easy task, and he might not play at Bayern Munich next season. He might be loaned somewhere, but the important thing is he's learning
exactly
in that environment now and playing. He needs to play regularly in Europe, and that's important for him next season.
He's got a foot in the door, you know.
But then you look at like a guy like Alessandro Circati. He didn't play in Australia. He for one reason or another thought that he'd be best served by going overseas, and it's worked for him. But it's not easy. You guys have done it. You've tried to do it. You go as a teenager, and it's dog eat dog.
Of course.
But people aren't welcoming you with open arms. They're trying to kick the living daylights out of you, right? Because you're going to take their spot.
Exactly.
So Circati is a great story, and he's a name that we should remember. He's playing in the Serie B for Parma.
Parma, yeah.
Top of the Serie B. They will be a Serie A side next year. He's a 19-year-old centre-back who plays every week. He starts every week. That is awesome.
Yeah.
And he's played already for the Socceroos. I think he'll play again for the Socceroos. It's a great story.
Why do you think – because he's not the only one. There's been a few that have slipped through and gone overseas.
Yeah. Christian Volpato.
He's another one.
Yeah.
I want your opinion on it. Why do these players slip through the cracks?
I don't know Christian Volpato personally. I met him. I went to Rome last year I met him and interviewed him.
Yeah.
And he seems like a lovely kid, and he just wants to make a professional career. And so far he's done great. Yeah. You know, he's played Serie A football for Roma. Mm. He's at Sassuolo. Why didn't anyone at Western Sydney Wanderers or Sydney FC see that potential? Now, you talk to people there and they say, well, he was immature at the time, or he was too small at the time, and now he's had a growth spurt and now he's matured. I'm not a coach. So it's probably best, you know, you get an opinion from that. But we shouldn't let these people slip through the system, but sometimes it does happen.
Yeah. Tell us a bit about your consulting business.
Yeah.
Nominis,
yeah. So a lot of people think I do football full time. It's not. It's just a part-time thing for me. I just a weekend gig and a hobby, which I love. But unfortunately, the football landscape in Australia is not big enough to sustain a full-time job. It shouldn't be that way, but it is.
Yep.
And there are hundreds of journalists who are full-time on AFL in this country or NRL because that's where the money is.
Yeah.
But I never followed that path. I followed my passion, but it meant that I had to always have a full-time job. So I've always worked in corporate environments. I worked for Telstra and in the media team there. And then after about 20 years of working for others, I sort of decided to set up my own business. So I've been doing that for 5 years. And basically we just help companies tell their story. You might work for a company that focuses on heart health, and they say, we've done this research and it's finding, you know, this, we found this new finding about how, you know, we can help people avoid heart attacks. All right, that's a great story. How are we going to tell that story? So they're the sort of things we do with clients. Yeah.
That's awesome. And you say 5 years you've been gone?
Yeah, it's been going 5 years now. So it's great. It's great to be able to work for yourself, and you know, you take a risk and you have to back yourself sometimes. But after working for, you know, 20, 25 years in the corporate environment, you've sort of learnt enough to be able to go out there on your own and make that decision.
That's awesome. All right, let's get into the nitty-gritties.
Yeah? Nitty-gritty. Nah.
Biggest interview in terms of calibre of player, who would you say, number one, who's the biggest, like, you were nervous for? I don't know, do you even get nervous anymore?
Not really.
No, I wouldn't think so.
Not really, but depends what you defined it as interview. So I did interview Cristiano Ronaldo. Oh,
it doesn't get bigger than that.
But it was pretty short. So I was on the MCG. It was when he came. He was playing for Real Madrid.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was literally a two-minute, you know, thing on the ground.
Yeah.
So it's not still really an interview. It's an interview, but it's not one of those ones where you could sit down and prepare and have a sit-down environment like this, one-on-one. But it was still fun. And it was, you know, it was a big name. So he was fun. But Gigi Buffon was one too. So I went to Italy not long after the World Cup in 06. So it was probably a couple of years after that. And I knew I'd be there. So I sort of sent an email to the club and said I'd be there during this period and love to interview him for Fox Sports in Australia. And eventually they agreed to do it. So I was in this sort of environment with him at the Juventus training ground, and we spent an hour talking. And he wouldn't do it in English, even though his English was pretty good.
Yeah.
So we had to do it in Italian.
Yeah.
And that was fine. My Italian's okay. And we got by. But yeah, it was great because he was always a hero to me. And the biggest takeout out of that interview and the things that the Fox producers used was the question about the game against Australia.
Of course.
And I asked him, was it a penalty? And interestingly enough, he said that he didn't think it was a penalty.
Really?
And that was his honest opinion. Now, maybe he was talking up to the audience because he knew that he was going back to Australia. But he said, I didn't think, I wouldn't have given a penalty.
What did you think? Was it a penalty?
Be careful because a few weeks ago. Yeah,
big debate.
Big debate.
Our comment section of that video.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like, I didn't see the comments. So I reckon if you're committing that foul today in the era of VAR, it's a penalty.
Yeah, see?
There you go.
Yeah.
The bait done, man.
You know what to do.
But it's true. That's what I think, especially like – and you got to think of it, the referee in real time.
Yeah.
When you see that, like I said, even if it was against us, like we're going for Italy at the time, I would be like, you can't dive in the box like that. No. It's a foul.
And unfortunately, that's what happened. So, you know, in my work with the Socceroos, we had this really – awful experience against South Korea. It was heartbreaking because we were 1-0 up in an Asian Cup quarterfinal and with minutes to spare. Mm. And then Lewis Miller, an inexperienced player, does a similar thing. He goes down in the box when maybe he didn't need to.
Didn't,
And Son was going nowhere. He was in the corner and it was late in the game. And unfortunately, he goes in and the referee gives the foul.
And which Son having he had experience to draw the foul.
Exactly. And that's what happens. Yeah. And the Italian players had the experience to draw the foul.
And that's exactly right. It's part of it. Like the arts of the game that, you know, the experience, knowing when to go down, when to stay up.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We were taught that at a young age. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Do you always, I always like to ask these for people who get to speak to footballers and stuff. Do you usually prepare something or you just like go with the flow off the cuff?
So for big interviews like that, you're sitting down in front of someone for an hour, absolutely,
of course,
prepare. Yeah. And the other one was Del Piero. So when Del Piero first came, he was always a hero to me.
Of course.
I was able to interview him for Fox, the first sit-down interview. So he literally got off the plane and into the studio. And at the time I was honoured to do that because you had Mark Bosnich, you had Adam Peacock, you had Robbie Slater. They all wanted to interview him because it was high profile. But my producer at the time, Murray Shaw, thanks Murray, knew that not only because I loved him, but I knew the story, the backstory about Del Piero, and maybe they thought there'd be a connection there between me and him because of my Italian background. I could talk to him in Italian off air, make him calm, make him more comfortable with the process because for him it was quite daunting. He wasn't fluent in English at the time. It was a broken English he would speak. So I think having someone that could speak to him in Italian sort of helped with that process. But yes, I would prepare for an interview like that. Do I prepare? So my normal job every week is to interview players after the game.
Yeah.
I don't write down the questions. I'll think about the types of things I want to ask. And it really is about the game at that point. So it's thinking about key moments in a game and asking questions about those key moments and then what it means for the team more broadly. And then sometimes you get tricky interviews like Tony Popovic. He can be tricky to interview. And there was one earlier this year where he didn't like the line of questioning at all and it became very uncomfortable for both of us. Yeah. And it was a run of results that they were having that they were drawing every game and not converting chances and not converting draws into wins. And they were starting to feel the pressure.
Yeah.
And that pressure became evident during the interview. And Popper sort of bristled at some of my questioning. And, it was difficult. But sometimes as an interviewer, you have to ask those difficult questions.
Of course. Have you had any, like, real awkward moments just on the back of that? Has it ever been a really awkward moment?
That was awkward.
Yeah, I could imagine, yeah.
I'll tell you one. And Archie Thompson has become a friend of mine over the years. But when he was playing, it comes back to Del Piero again.
Yeah.
When he was playing, and there's clips, about this that are on social media, and people give me shit about it. People give Archie shit about it. So people on two sides of the fence.
Yeah.
But again, live TV, anything can happen. But after the game, it was victory in Sydney at Etihad, Marvel, whatever it's called these days, Marvel Stadium. And the producer's like, make sure you get Del Piero in there. Like they talk to you in your ear. And I'm like, all right, and I'm looking, where's Del Piero? And Archie's there. And I'm like, Archie, come over. We want to interview you. He's like, okay. And then Del Piero's over there and I'm trying to wave to him. And anyway, so they're about to cross to me and I see Del Piero walking towards me and about to walk off. And Archie's there ready. And they cross to me and like, yeah, thanks. We've got Archie Thompson here, but Archie, can you just hold on a second? Because Del Piero's coming and we don't want to lose him. And this is like first few games that Del Piero had played. Yeah. Like it was big and everyone wanted to hear what he had to say. And Archie cracked the shits, and rightly so, because I was about to interview him and I said, no, hold on, you're not that important. We want him first. And Archie rightly was like, fuck you. <That's so good. laughs> And we still have a laugh about it today. But in hindsight, I probably should have said, you know what, if Del Piero doesn't want to wait, then bad luck. But then I had the pressure from my producer saying, mate, don't lose him, don't lose him, because he's the star and everyone wants to hear from him. And I thought, if I don't get him now, then I'm going to lose him. So I had to make a split-second decision, probably the wrong one for Archie, but, you know, for my producer it was the right one. So anyway, that's sort of gone viral.
Yeah, well, at least you can laugh
if you look it up, you'll probably see it. So sorry, Archie.
Yeah, your mates now worked out.
We're going to try and get Archie on. You know what I find impressive? Like, obviously, I love listening to your interviews with the players because I think you connect really well. It's nice to listen to. But when you do the halftime crosses to the crowds, I try and put myself in that situation and I just think it's impossible. How do you just keep it going? You make it look so seamless.
Yeah. I think it just becomes like, you just get used to it over the years. You get comfortable in front of a camera. I'll never forget because I spoke about SEN. So the first 3 years of the A-League, I commentated on radio and radio was my thing. I'd never done any TV. And then I was given an opportunity in season four to work on TV. And I was petrified because it was live TV. I'd never done TV. But they backed me. They said, you know what you're doing. Actually, Ange put my name forward because we'd worked together and they were looking for someone in Melbourne to do sidelines and the producers, Murray at the time said, Ange, do you know anyone? And Ange said, yeah, this guy here, give him a go. And I've thanked Ange for that recently because it's sort of opened a new world to me. But I'll never forget, for years I was petrified, man. I'd run to the toilet just before we'd go on air. My stomach was like, mumbling and butterflies. And I'd write down everything I wanted to say word for word and practice. And so for years I would be uncomfortable in front of the screen and maybe that was noticeable or not. But that was 15 years ago.
Yeah.
So over time – you become more comfortable in that environment. It's like anything you do. The more you do it, the more you become comfortable with it. Yeah.
So what's next for Zappers? What's on the horizon?
What's next? Oh, probably retirement.
Why not? Yeah.
I turned 50 this year. So I love what I do and you know, I'm grateful for the opportunity. So every year I treat it like it's my last season because TV is a very fickle industry and there are a million people that would love to do what I'm doing and I understand that and I realise that. So you sort of try and bring your best to what you do every week because if you don't do your job properly, there are thousands of others who would kill to be in your spot.
A bit like a footballer.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm grateful for that opportunity every week that I'm there and I value, the chance that I've been given. So what's next? Just continue to do what I'm doing. I love doing what I'm doing. A-League football is the bread and butter. It's week in, week out, and it's enjoyable, but it also opens doors to other things. So in the last couple of years, I've been lucky enough to travel to Scotland, and Channel 10 was good enough to send me there and interview Ange when he won the title for Celtic, and we were at Celtic Park on the last day when they lifted the trophy, and the atmosphere inside Celtic Park was incredible, one of the best atmospheres I've ever experienced at a football match. seen Ange address the crowd after the game and the way he spoke to them, and they were just listening to every single word he said and hanging off every word he said. And Tommy Rogic's last game for Celtic, he got a standing ovation. So those moments are pretty special. And I went to Catania last year, and I visited Vince Grella and Mark Bresciano when they were promoted from the Serie D into the Serie C. Again, the last game of the season, fireworks. Talk about pyrotechnics, mate. Fireworks there. I'll show you the videos after. I've never seen so many pyrotechnics in one stadium in my life. Yeah. And football is their religion.
Yeah.
And that's what we know. We know that as football people. Mm. But until you experience it really drives it home. Yeah. And so having those experiences around the world, what's next? I'd love more of those experiences and seeing football culture all around the world. I'd love to travel to Argentina one day and watch Boca and that's another experience altogether as well. So I ticked off a lot on my football bucket list. I went to my first English Premier League game this season. Mm-hmm. I saw Arsenal play Manchester City at the Emirates. And I was sitting in the Manchester City away bay because I've known a few people at Manchester City. So we're in the Emirates Stadium sitting in the Manchester City. It is the most crazy thing I've ever experienced in my life.
How so?
So you've got to think these guys are, probably 2,000 or 3,000 of them traveling from Manchester. So a couple of hours on the train. It's a day out for them. Yeah. So they work towards, they work hard all week and this is their day out.
Yeah.
So they would have been on the beers since 9 o'clock in the morning on the train, drinking all day.
Liquid breakfast.
Yeah. Get to the stadium, and the way they manage the crowds in England is extraordinary. So you can't drink inside the stadium, but you can drink in the terrace, sort of in the area just outside. So before you walk into the seat, there's a little area just outside there in the – is it the terrace?
Where you walk through the stadium.
Whatever that area is called. So there's, at Amy Park, they've got the bars and the coffee shops in that area there. And that area is packed. You can't move in there. But they're caged in like lions. So there's no Arsenal fans in there. There was just the Manchester City. So there's thousands of Manchester City fans in this little area drinking beer. Kids on top of the dad's shoulders, beer flying everywhere. Is this like PG rated this show, or can we talk about drugs or whatever?
Yeah,
so then I walk into the toilet area because I had a couple of beers myself. Yeah. I wasn't drinking since 9 o'clock, and there's just this cloud of smoke, right? Because you can't smoke in the stadium, right? But not just normal smoke, like weed.
Oh, yeah.
And I couldn't see you from here to there. That's how big it was. But then not only that, even better, I'll go to the urinal.
Nose beers.
Nose beers.
Yeah, of course.
Like these guys just at the urinal.
Just another day.
At a football game. I'm thinking this would never happen at the MCG.
No way.
But what it did create was an amazing atmosphere. And they were all, apart from that, behaved. Like they were there to watch their team play and have fun. So then they can't drink when the game's on. So then they're all flying during the
game. Their half-time comes.
Chanting, half-time, back.
Recharge.
And so it goes on. So a brilliant experience for someone who's never experienced that environment. So that's what's next. More of those experiences, but not doing what those guys
just
do.
Just observe
from a distance. Well, thank you for doing everything you do for football in Australia. It's honestly much appreciated.
Don't thank me.
You're all part of it. It's nice. We try and push what we can on our platforms, but you do it on the big stage. And thank you for that.
Well done to you guys too, because I know that there's a new generation of fans that love watching you guys. And my son goes, oh, yeah, I know those guys. I watch them. So I go, yeah, you should do that, Dad. So well done to you guys too, because we need the new generation to fall in love with the game and get behind our game in this country as well.
Appreciate that. Big thank you for coming on again. It's much appreciated. It's been an absolute pleasure. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Of course.
Also, good luck with the New York Marathon. Ali tells me you're training with
us. Yes. Hey, Elite, get to Elite Gym. They're very good.
Elite.
So two marathons this year.
Two.
Gold Coast in July and New York in November. So
you're crazy,
good luck, mate.
It's the way I celebrate my 50th.
That's it. Nice. Very good. If you haven't already, please make sure you are following us across all our socials. Follow us on Spotify. Drop us a like, comment, subscribe.
All the usual
stuff. Make sure you give Zappers a follow on Instagram as well. He's pretty active.
My son's got more followers than me.
Oh, really? Follow your son too. And the business as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, once again, thank you very much.
Thanks,
thank
guys.
You guys for tuning in, and we'll see you next episode.